Hello and welcome to the Brutal Iron Gym Podcast, where our goal was to cut through the BS and deliver the brutal truth about topics related to health and happiness. Today's podcast number 1512. The topic is Q&A, and the title is Exercise Library and Exercise Difficulty Considerations. So this actually came from a question from a trainer. So I'm going to read the question and then we'll kind of get into it. So they wrote, I had a question for you regarding exercise selection for your clients. I know you have a personal document that you pull from. Is there any resources I can look at to make myself a list? And what they're referencing is, I've talked about this in a couple podcasts before, not too often, but I have mentioned it, where when I'm creating a client's program, one of the things that helps me is I have compiled a list of tutorial videos off of YouTube. So every exercise I ever give to a client, there's a tutorial video included. So that way they can see somebody doing it, learn how to, you know, do the movements. Just really helps with increasing their education and awareness of proper technique. So every exercise has a video link. Well, I do one-on-one programming as the majority of my job, and I create programs unique to each individual, which means that I use a lot of variety of exercises. So the document that I have is actually a Word document, which my wife Meredith laughs because I do old people things basically with computers where I use Word documents rather than using like Google Docs and like Excel sheets and stuff. It's just easy for me. It's what I'm familiar with. So I have a document that's 250 pages. Yes. 250 pages on a Microsoft Word document, and then I use Control F, which is the find function, and I type the exercise that I have in my mind that I want the client to use. I start typing in the name that I gave it. So basically what I do is I'm like, okay, well, maybe I want them to do a dumbbell 30-degree incline press, and I want them to do an alternating press. So maybe they press in one arm, then the other arm, one arm, then the other arm. So I'll just name it, you know, dumbbell, one arm, alternating. Like, well, it'd be dumbbell, 30-degree incline, one arm, alternating, chest press. And then I make a video for it, or I find a video for it. I link it and write it underneath that title that I gave it. And then I move on to the next exercise. So there's, on average, 15 exercises per page, and that's a ridiculously conservative average. So that's 3,750 exercises that I use to make clients' programs, and I'm adding to that document every single week. There isn't a week that goes by that I don't think of some kind of other exercise or some kind of position that I want somebody to do that I didn't already have a video for. So that document is just always growing. So there's 3,750 exercises that I know. And probably more than that. This is all I do all day, and it's all I've been doing for, you know, 20-some years. So there's 3,750 exercises that I think through to try to create the most personalized programming. That is incredibly helpful. One of the nice things is if I want the exercise again later on, you know, maybe I'm doing a program 3 or 4 months later, and it's like, hey, you know, I'd like them to go back to exercise, you know, XYZ, and see what our progression is. Well, I just go Control F, I type in exercise XYZ, right there's the title that I gave it, right there's the video link that I paired with it. So it's very quick, very easy. I can just transfer it to their program, write in the sets and reps that I want them to do, then I move on to the next exercise. So it's a really cool feature because I don't have to go back onto YouTube every time I want to try to look for and find a specific exercise. That document has just been a slow growth over time. I actually lost the document one time when it was 100-and-some pages. My computer crashed and I couldn't get it back, so I had to start it over again. But it's 250 pages, 3,750 exercises, and I'm always adding new stuff to that. So that's how individualized my client's programming is and how much variety there is. So I was talking to my mom, for example. I've been training my mom since she was 47. She's 63 now. So that's been 16 years. She might be 64. I'm not sure. So somewhere in there. So it's been like 16, 17 years. And I do programs for her that are new every 4 weeks. So every month. So let's see. Okay. So that's 17 years. Well, let's go 16 years times 12, which is 12 months per year. So that's 192 months of programming. My mama has never repeated the same workout. So if we have an upper body workout, it's different for 192 months. She has not done the same upper body workout. Something changes. Maybe the movement preparation of it changes, the sets and rep changes. We're definitely going to repeat exercises because we want to see if we've improved on them. But what we do before that, what we do after that, you know, the different volumes and whatnot that we do, it's all different. We actually were talking about that yesterday. I meet with my mom once a week and we talk about her training clients and stuff. And we were talking about how she has never repeated the same program. Like, she's never repeated the same workout. So for 192 months, my mom has never repeated the same workout. That's pretty amazing. And I do that with all my clients. So they have a lot of similarities from month to month, or maybe going back 6 months, they see a program that's very similar because we're trying to track, you know, progressions of squat, bench, deadlift, maybe dumbbell presses. Maybe we're tracking their pull-up ability. They want to be able to do pull-ups. We're doing a lot of pull-up negatives. There's a lot of components that cycle back through, but the exact same workout is never repeated. And there's a lot to go into that, and I should actually just make its own individual podcast, so I will do that. But there's a lot of reasons why I do that, and one of the main reasons why I love it is because people are always learning. They're always learning something new. They're always interested. It's not the same thing. It gets boring, and you would lose motivation. So I love it because it keeps them excited. It keeps them interested. So not only they're improving their physical health, but they're improving and nurturing their mental and emotional health, which I really love as well. So that's the document that I use. Now, how can you create that for yourself? That's basically what the trainer's question was, is how do they do that for themselves? It's not anything fancy. I don't think there's maybe, you know, maybe there's a database out there you can just start with, but I know like a lot of the programs where like a trainer signs up through, you know, X system, and that system gives them their own website, and it looks like they have their own app, but they're pulling from the same exercises that any other coach, you know, who's using that system is. And I am unaware of any systems that have 3,750 exercises. It would be very rare. So if you want to create it yourself, it's literally just when you go to write a workout, if you're a trainer, when you write a workout for somebody, save the name, the exercise name, and the link for it, and just copy and paste it into Microsoft Word. Maybe you want to do Excel, whatever you want. One of the reasons why I like Microsoft Word is I also deliver my programs in Microsoft Word, so the formatting is already the same. So whatever format you use to deliver your programs, you probably want to keep that list in a similar format so that way you're not copying and pasting and then having to redo the format for every single exercise. But it's no secret. It's just, I think this is a good exercise. Let me find a video for it. Let me copy the video for it and then just build that page by page by page by page. So if you're one of my clients, just take the programs I send you. And if you want to, you can condense the space. So my document that I have, the 250 pages, it's all single spaced, size 10 font. So it's freaking huge document. And it's all back to back to back to back to back. There's no spacing. There's no formatting. I just know the exercise I want. So I just type it in and look for it. But if you want to do this for yourself, you can use the programs I send. Just get rid of the spaces in the program. Maybe you want to group them by chest. Yeah, I mean, my body part, like chest or back or something. That can get very difficult, though, because some exercises are good for movement prep or thoracic awareness or hip mobility or muscle cardio. So you'd start to say, okay, well, this exercise does this and this. Do I put it under both categories? Do I put it under one category? What do I do? So it can be hard to maintain a very crisp format in regards to compartmentalizing the exercises, but it wouldn't be bad to start there. That's actually how I started the document. I was like, let me group all the leg exercises. Let me group the back exercises, chest exercises. Then all of a sudden I was like, well, this one doesn't really work your back, but it's more for like thoracic positioning. So I'm going to create that category. So it started growing to where the categories then were just I wasn't able to maintain categories, and it didn't need it. I didn't usually look them up by category. I just thought at first that's what I would have benefited from, but I just look them up by the name that I want. So if you're not a client, then it's going to be a little harder for you because you have to go find a name of an exercise that you think is helpful. You then have to find a video that you hope is, you know, correct. Unfortunately, not all videos on YouTube are actually any good. But you copy that, paste it, try to make a document. Having an exercise library, I do believe, even if you're not a trainer, especially if you are a trainer, but even if you're not a trainer, it's really helpful. It's a really good idea to do because it helps with exercise idea generation. We tend to get in our kind of similar ruts. You know, there's about 5 to 6 back work exercises I really like. So I just kind of switch back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And often you'll see the people like develop these weaknesses and imbalances that they never find because they're only repeating very similar movements. I had a new client recently. They were having basically their piriformis was super tight and it was pulling their lower back out of place and really messing up some lower back pain, hip pain when they were squatting. So we're working on piriformis kind of therapies, but also I'm having to do unilateral movements to try to redevelop balance from side to side due to the imbalance that had developed from heavy squatting with improper muscular tightnesses. And this is the first week, and what she sent back so far has been, oh my God, these are really humbling, you know, Bulgarian split squats. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is really humbling. So she's getting her butt whooped by getting some new movements. And just by getting new movements, new positions, new angles, it's really helping her to feel and expose the imbalances that she did have that she wasn't aware that she had, or at least not to this extent. So having new positions and really getting out of that same comfort zone, that same stuff all the time is super helpful. You don't have to have brand new weird exercises every time you work out, but you know, using a couple familiar ones and then a couple new ones is a good recipe to kind of put it all together and keep you pushing and learning and growing. Another benefit when you're writing it for yourself or for clients is you can improve basically the flow of your workouts. Some of the trainers that I work with that are newer trainers, their workouts don't flow well, meaning they have you do one exercise into another exercise into another exercise, but none of them make any sense that they're next to each other. So it's like, well, this is a chest thing and this is a chest thing and this is a chest thing. I'm like, yeah, but it's for various reasons, it doesn't work. So for a very quick, easy example is they might have the person lay on the ground and do crunches. Then they want them to stand up and do like a single leg balance movement to work on their hips. Then they want them to get back down on the ground and do a thoracic movement for the thoracic shoulder positioning. And it's like, you really want to get on the ground, stand up, get on the ground, stand up, get on the ground, stand up for 3 rounds of that stuff? Don't do that to the people. People don't want to do that. So if they're down the ground, just do everything down the ground. If they're standing up, do everything standing up. So one of the things you can do with an exercise library document, like what I've taught a trainer recently, was I said, type in the positions. So if you're doing, say, a quadruped position, which is on your hands and knees, just type the word quadruped. And in Control F, like Control Find function of Microsoft Word, it'll just pull up everything that says quadruped. So you're like, okay, well, I want them to do a movement preparation circuit where we're working on abdominal tightness awareness. I want them to learn how to tighten their abs. We then want to work on thoracic rotation to work on mid-back and shoulder health. We're also going to do a lat stretch. There's a lat elongation type stretch, which helps open up the lats. And then we want them to do maybe hip circles and then a plank. The idea of all of that circuit would be is maybe getting them ready for, say, a squat. The vacuums is breathing awareness, which they'll need to have in the squat. Thoracic rotations helps them to be able to get their hands up behind them to get into a back rack position for the squat without having tons of shoulder and elbow stress. The lat elongation stretch actually improves that as well. It improves the rotation position of the shoulder that's needed to have a proper back squat positioning. The hip squat, the hip circle drill from a quadruped position helps warm up the hips. Helps loosen the adductors, helps you get used to firing and squeezing the glute muscles, all the inner glute muscles underneath the gluteus maximus, so that way the hip gets a lot of blood flow into it and it feels really warmed up. And then plank is a really good idea. You can do a bunch of different types of planks, but some type of plank is good because it activates like kind of core bracing, and they can get a feel for what it'll be like to have their core super rock tight, you know, for the squats. So that could be a very good movement prep circuit. And it's all from a quadruped position with a plank or just from your elbows and your toes. So maybe a plank from the elbows rather than your hands. But that is all super smooth. Your vacuums you can do in that quadruped from your hands and knees position, thoracic rotations from the same position, lat elongation stretch from the same position, hip circles from the same position. Then the planks, you just kind of extend your legs and you do it from your toes and your elbows. Awesome. People can do circuits of that, and they don't have to get up and down, up and down, up and down. It all flows really well. You cover all the body parts. You get the body ready for a squat, and it's super fast. You can do that whole circuit in like 10, 12 minutes, and bam, you're ready to go. So you don't need to spend forever getting warmed up for squats and stuff like that. So that's one of the benefits of having the exercise library document, is you can just improve the quality of flow of the workouts and just have them feel kind of easier to navigate through. So hopefully all of that was helpful. Now there's a second part to the question. So he goes on and says, also with that, how can I determine if a movement is beginner, intermediate, or advanced? And this is a good question. This trainer and most trainers, you're going to just kind of know. I know that that's not a good answer in the sense it doesn't have like concrete aspects to it. And I'm going to give you some concrete aspects, but you'll know, you know, if something feels super elaborate, probably not going to want to give that to a beginner. If something is super boring, you're probably not going to give that to a high level athlete, you know, so you're going to have some instincts to it. And those instincts are going to help you for sure. So one of the things that I always encourage my interns, my clients who are trainers, anybody I've helped with business, so all those categories of services and people. In an old podcast that I made, podcast 264, which was back in 2019, it was a trainer education podcast titled Do It First. If you want to find that podcast, you can go to our website, www.brutalirongym.com. There's directions on how to find old podcasts. But Do It First for a trainer education podcast, what it means is just do the movement. Don't give clients exercises that you haven't done. Maybe you can't do the same weight as your client. You know, so I have clients that can squat three times their body weight. Can I squat three times my body weight? Unfortunately, not right now. So, you know, someday maybe I'm going to work my butt off for it, but I can't do that. But I know how to squat. I know how to max effort squat. I know how to squat to where your eyes pop out of your face. I know what that feels like. So therefore, when I give it to a client, I have an idea of how they're going to feel, what should be before that movement, what should be after that movement. I can talk to them about what they're feeling during the movement. So you really should not ever, 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 ever give a client an exercise that you haven't done. And I'm a big, big, big believer in this, because that's how you're going to be able to relate to them. That's how you're going to be able to best keep them safe. And it's how you're going to know kind of how to create a great workout, because you know what this exercise, how it influences the next one and the next one and the next one. So it's very, very, very important to do all of the exercises you would ever give to someone, do them first. That might sound overwhelming, but you're going to be working out anyhow if you're a trainer. So do it yourself. Like, do a couple of the exercises. You don't have to make a whole workout out of it, you know, but try a couple sets, get a feel for how it's going to feel. So I've, to the best of my knowledge, I have never given somebody an exercise that I haven't done. And that's 3,750 exercises minimum. But I've been training since I was 16, so that's 23 years. I just turned 39. So it's 23 years of lifting weights. And for multiple years, I trained every single day. And now the least I've ever trained is maybe three or four times a week, you know, for 23 years. So it's a lot of workouts, a lot of experience, and that is going to help you become a better trainer. And that will give you the best instincts of whether something's beginner, intermediate, or advanced. Now, some things to consider is, well, how many muscles are involved? If it's an isolation movement, like just a bicep curl, or I'm just doing, you know, crunches, that's probably beginner friendly. You know, I don't see, you know, how it can get any simpler than that. So if it's a single muscle compared to a full body exercise, like say you're doing a clean and jerk. Probably not the best thing to do for a beginner. You're probably going to want to break that movement down into subsections that have more isolative type movement related. You know, get good at the isolations, then put them all together for the compound. But in general, doing isolative movements or the fewer muscles involved, that's probably going to be more favoritism towards like a beginner. The more muscles you have involved, probably the more advanced that exercise is going to be. Also, what's the stability concern, the coordination of it? You know, so if I'm doing a chest press on a machine, that's much more beginner friendly than trying to do a one rep max of dumbbells, like dumbbell chest press. I don't think anybody should do a one rep max of a dumbbell chest press. But the point is, if I'm going to go for an all out, super hard, heavy set of six dumbbell presses, so I'm going to do six reps of a dumbbell chest press. That's probably going to be a bad idea for a beginner because they can't even stabilize the dumbbells, let alone trying to max out their strength. So they're going to be so worn out from trying to stabilize it that they're not going to be able to push very heavy weight. So can you do dumbbell chest presses with beginners? Hell yes. You're just not going to try for like a six rep max. You're more so just going to say, hey, can we do this without dropping the dumbbell in our face? Can we get coordinated to not lift our shoulders up off the bench? Can you not dance your feet around so much? You know, you're trying to work on kind of technique quality, but you want movements to be, if they're stability demanding, you're not going to put as much emphasis on the weight load, especially for beginners. If the stability isn't a problem, it's a chest press machine, you know, or you're chest pressing on a Smith machine or something, then great, you can definitely push them to a harder intensity for sure because the stability isn't a concern. Also, coordination. You know, if the movement requires high coordination, probably not good for a beginner. So, like there was somebody the other day in a gym was doing a single kettlebell. It was a swing between their legs into a front rack catch position in a front lunge. And then they pushed off their front leg to do an overhead press as they returned back to their like standing overhead press position. So it was a one arm kettlebell swing into a front rack, like forward lunge catch, then drive off the front leg into an overhead press. Great for advanced athletes, sure. Is a beginner going to do that? Probably not. You might need them to just work on a kettlebell swing to catching in a front rack alone. Work on lunges if they have the ability to even do that yet, that alone, before you know you start putting all that stuff together. So if it's high coordination, it's probably not going to be a beginner-friendly movement. Also, the number of cues that are needed to keep somebody safe. So how many things are happening in the movement? If there's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 things you remember so that way you don't die doing it, don't give that to a beginner. Try to make it to where, you know, as long as they're doing one or two things right, they're not going to hurt themselves. That's definitely more like beginner friendly. Another thing we want to look at is loading capacity. How heavy can this movement be loaded? You know, if there's the more advanced athletes can handle heavier weight loads. So if I have a beginner, and let's say I'm doing like a strongman circuit, and I have them doing tire flips, farmer's carries, and sandbag carries. You know, like sandbag where they throw it up on their shoulder. So sandbag clean to shoulder, and then they have to carry it on their shoulder. So they're doing tire flips, farmer's carries, then sandbag clean to shoulder carries. That will destroy a beginner. Absolutely destroy them, because that's pretty much every muscle in the body. Tons of stabilization. It's going to require really good core stability, good hip movement to get the tire flipped over. They're going to be absolutely wrecked. I don't know if I would recommend starting with something like that for a beginner. You might want to introduce each movement individually and have that be the whole workout. And then the next time they come, you can put it together as a circuit, but really minimal weight loads. Just get them, again, working on technique. So it might take, say, 4 weeks to where you get them up to like a heavy loading capacity, where they're actually near maximal effort. Whereas for an advanced athlete, especially if they're already used to doing strongman, that's just another day. They're going to go through that circuit and still do some other things in their workout. So that is something to consider, is loading capacity. Is if something requires, if it can be loaded very heavy and it requires a lot of stabilization, a lot of muscles, that's probably not beginner friendly. Now, can you make a beginner flip a tire? Hell yes. Can they do, you know, farmer's carries? Hell yes. Can they do sandbag clean to shoulder carries? Hell yes. You know, can they do big complex movements? Yes, but you're not going to start at maximal weight load. So that's another thing you can adjust, is the intensity level. If you're unsure if the movement is good for a beginner, intermediate, or advanced, whatever client you have, start with a lighter intensity. Do a couple warm-up sets. You know, if you're like, I bet they could probably do 80 pounds on this, but I'm going to give them maybe 20, and then we're just going to talk about how it feels, and maybe they'll smoke it, and they'll be like, oh, geez, you know, okay, let's move up. And you're like, okay, yeah, we'll go 40, 60, 80, boom. But maybe if you start at 20, they kind of struggle a little bit. You get to 40, and you're like, hey, this is looking like a challenge. We're just going to stop here. So you thought they maybe could do 80, but you realize, oh, crap, 40 is kind of kicking their butt. So modifying the intensity level can be helpful on any exercise. If you start at a low intensity, like a low weight load threshold, say 25 to 50% of what you think they can do, then you don't get caught off guard, or you yourself, you don't try to get into something and you get hurt because you started too heavy. But that's another thing to consider. Another factor we have is collateral involvement. And what I mean by this is what muscles are being used to get to the muscle that you want. So an example of this would be, say, a barbell bent over row. If I have a beginner and they're not super duper strong, they're kind of newish to all this, maybe they're doing barbell bent over row the first time just with a 45-pound barbell. I want to teach them where to squeeze in the middle of the back, how to drive the movement through, you know, like a kind of a back contraction rather than a bicep curl. I want them to have a nice neutral spine position throughout the movement. So you're working on a lot of that. So maybe you get to 45-pound barbell, maybe you add a 10 on each side, you get 65 pounds. So that's going to be something where very beginner-friendly, totally fine. And you can do that more often. You can do a lot of sets of it, a lot of volume, because it is a lighter weight load. Let's say you have somebody who's super freaking strong and they can do 315 pounds for 10 reps of a barbell bent over row. You're not going to want to do as much overall volume because all the muscles that are used in order to get to the back muscles. So in a barbell bent over row, your hamstrings, your abs, your lower back, you have a lot of muscles that are trying to hold you into position, trying to isometrically contract so you don't move, other than just the muscles that you want to actually work. So if somebody's strong enough to do 315 for a set of 10 of barbell bent over rows, you're going to do that not as often, not as many sets for total volume as you would for maybe a beginner. So a lot of movements can be modified to be beginner, intermediate, or advanced simply by changing the intensity weight load and or the volume. If they're better than you thought, you don't have to do as many sets because they used heavier weights. If they're not as good as you thought, you might have to do more sets because they didn't use enough weight. So those are some things to consider. And also, like programming things, sometimes you just want a client to get in and get moving. So you try to make it super simple. So in our gym, we have a Concept 2 rower, Concept 2 ski erg. And sometimes if my clients are familiar with those, I'm like, I'm not going to take you through a 15-minute really crazy, you know, nuanced movement prep. Let's just get on the rower, the ski erg, go back and forth 2 minutes each for 3 rounds. So 12 minutes, they're going to be absolutely destroyed. Yeah, in a sense of like tons of warm-up, maybe we go right into some like Olympic lifting with some cueing movements, and they're good to go. You know, and they can get a big, long, fun, crazy workout in less than 60 minutes because we didn't make the warm-up movement prep too complex. So just keeping things simple can be really helpful rather than making it overly complicated. I tend to, in my workouts when I write with clients or training the clients in person, if I have one complex thing where we're setting up bands or it's a new bar, new position, new movement, I try to make the other things very simple. Try not to have every freaking thing be some weird new thing that the person might not be good at or not feel super comfortable with. Give them a couple of things that they like, give them a couple of things that are easy, blend that in with the more complex things that you think they need to know, but maybe are a little overwhelming at first to know. So that's a lot to think on. I hope I touched on the majority of what I think will help. A lot of it for trainers is if you do it yourself, you're going to know how it feels. And then you're going to start to say, okay, if I have somebody who's a beginner, maybe they can do this, but let me start light. If I have someone who's advanced, oh yeah, they're going to freaking love this. And I know I can probably start here and I can probably pair this and this with it because I know how it feels. So do it yourself first. make that big long exercise list, so that way you have a quick recall of different movements that you've tried and you feel comfortable with teaching to others. Awesome. Well, if you are a trainer or you're training yourself, we do have templates for sale now on our website. The training templates are between 30 to 50 pages of information. It tells you everything you need to know about setting up a workout, warm-ups, selecting the right weight, weekly progressions, all that stuff. And then we have per workout structure telling you how to create an individual workout based on the goals, what exercises go in which places and which exercises work best. So we have all that stuff. If you want to learn more about it, we have training templates for fat loss and shaping, if that's your goal, for both a 30-minute session or a 60-minute session. So you can pick either one of those. Some of the trainers I work with, they train people in 30-minute sections. So that's why we made that template. You can learn more about those templates on podcast 1486 is the 30-minute one, and then podcast 1499 is the 60-minute one. And then we just put up our powerlifting template, which is over 50 pages of powerlifting information and programming. You can learn more about that in podcast 1504. So you can check those out on our website, www.brutalirongym.com, training template page, learn and read all about it, listen to the podcast to know what's in the template before you buy it. And then if you have any questions or you want to make a request for a template, just shoot me an email and let me know. You can do that actually on the website as well. So we have a request for one that I'm making now, is where we're blending the goals of speed, strength, and muscle size / endurance, kind of like muscle stimulus, and how you can rotate through that depending on if you want to peak, you know, either one in different sections of the year. So that's going to be super fun. Probably going to be a crap ton of pages, but it'll be awesome to make and awesome to be able to deliver and offer to other people. So if you have any questions about that, check them out and just let me know. My email is brutalirongym@gmail.com. Well, thank you for listening. I hope this was helpful. If you have any extra questions, just reach out and I'll promise I'll get to them in another podcast. Well, if you like our podcast, please share it. The more people we share it with, the more people we can help. If you share it on social media, that does reach the most amount of people, but you can even just share in a conversation. Just let people know that the podcast exists, that we answer questions for free. Thank you to those who donate to support the podcast. You can do that on our website. The podcast is actually well over $1,000 a year for hosting costs. I give an hour to it every day, and we want to keep it for free. So thank you to those who donate. You can do a one-time donation, monthly donation, yearly donation, even just $5 a month. It does add up, and it does help. So thank you to those who do that. If you like the information we share in our podcast, you can find more from us on our social media channels. I post on Instagram every day, and I'm posting a lot more on YouTube. So check out both of those under the name Brutal Iron Gym. If you have any questions, feedback, suggestions, anything you want to know, let us know at our email, brutalirongym@gmail.com. As always, I hope this was helpful, and thank you for listening.